The words, "I'm so glad you approve," rose to my lips, but I didn't say them. I wanted, after all, an incredibly, unspeakably huge and dangerous favor. "All the money in the box," I said instead. "Enough for you to buy land, or rooms on a station, or hell, even a station."
"A very small one,"
her lips quirked in amusement. "And you wouldn't have it anymore. It's dangerous even to have seen it, but it's worse to actually have it."
"And you,"
she pointed out, straightening, dropping her arms, voice now unamused,
"will bring it directly to the attention of the Lord of the Roch, who will then be able to trace it back to me."
"That will always be a danger," I agreed. I wouldn't even pretend that once I fell into Mianai's control, she wouldn't be able to extract any information from me she wished, no matter what I wanted to reveal or conceal. "But it has been a danger since the moment you laid eyes on it, and will continue to be for as long as you live, whether you give it to me or not."
Striegan sighed. "That's true, unfortunately enough, and truth to tell, I want very badly to go home."
Foolish beyond belief, but it wasn't my concern. My concern was getting that gun. I said nothing. Neither did Striegan. Instead, she put on her outer coat and gloves and went out the two doors, and I sat down to eat my breakfast, trying very hard not to guess where she had gone, or whether I had any reason at all to be hopeful. She returned 15 minutes later with a wide, flat black box. Striegan set the box on the table. It seemed like one solid block, but she lifted off a thick layer of black, revealing more black beneath. Striegan stood, waiting, the lid in her hands, watching me. I reached out and touched a spot on the black, with one finger, gently. Brown spread from where I touched, pooling out into the shape of a gun, now exactly the color of my skin. I lifted my finger, and black flooded back. Reached out, lifted off another layer of black, beneath which it finally began to look like a box, with actual things in it, if a disturbingly light-suckingly black box filled with ammunition. Striegan reached out and touched the upper surface of the layer of black I still held. Gray spread from her fingers into a thick strap curled alongside where the gun lay.
"I wasn't sure what that was. Do you know?"
"It's armor. Officers and human troops used externally worn armor units instead of the sort that was installed in one's body, like mine. But 1,000 years ago, everyone's had been implanted."
"It's never tripped a single alarm, never shown up in any scan I've been through."
That was what I wanted. The ability to walk onto any Rodchai station without alerting anyone to the fact I was armed. The ability to carry a weapon into the very presence of Anander Mianai without anyone realizing it. Most Ananders had no need for armor. Being able to shoot through it was just an extra. Striegan asked,
"How does it do that? How does it hide itself?"
"I don't know." I replaced the layer I was holding and then the very top.
"How many of the bastard do you think you can kill?"
I looked up, away from the box, from the gun, the unlikely goal of nearly 20 years' efforts in front of me, real and solid, in my grasp. I wanted to say, "As many as I can reach before they take me down." But realistically, I could only expect to meet one, a single body out of thousands. Then again, realistically, I could never have expected to find this gun.
"That depends," I said. If you're going to make a desperate, hopeless act of defiance, you should make it a good one.
I gestured my agreement. I plan to ask for an audience.
Will you get one?
Probably. Any citizen can ask for one and will almost certainly receive it. I wouldn't be going as a citizen.
Stregan scoffed. How are you going to pass as non-Rajshahi?
I will walk onto the docks of a provincial palace with no gloves or the wrong ones, announce my foreign origin, and speak with an accent. Nothing more will be required.
She blinked, frowned. Not really.
I assure you, as a non-citizen, my chances of obtaining an audience will depend on my reasons for asking. I hadn't thought that part all the way through yet. It would depend on what I found when I got there. Some things can't be planned too far in advance.
And what are you going to do about?
She waved an ungloved hand toward unconscious Savardhan. I had avoided asking myself that question. Avoided from the moment I found her, thinking more than one step ahead when it came to what I was going to do about Savardhan.
Watch him, she said. He might have reached the point where he's ready to give up the Kef for good, but I don't think he has.
Why not?
He hasn't asked me for help.
It was my turn to raise a skeptical eyebrow. If he asked, would you help?
I'd do what I could. Though, of course, he'd need to address the problems that led him to use in the first place, if it was going to work long term. Which I don't see any sign of him doing.
Privately, I agreed, but I didn't say anything.
He could have asked for help any time, Stregan continued. He's been wandering around for, what, at least 5 years? Any doctor could have helped him if he wanted it. But that would mean admitting he had a problem, wouldn't it? And I don't see that happening any time soon.
It would be best if he went back to the Roch. Roch medics could solve all her problems, and wouldn't trouble themselves with whether or not Savardhan had asked for their help, or wanted it in any way.
He won't go back to the Roch unless he admits he has a problem.
I gestured, not my concern. He can go where he likes.
But you're feeding him, and no doubt you'll pay his fare up the ribbon and to whatever system you take ship for next. He'll stay with you as long as it's to his advantage, as long as there's food and shelter. And he'll steal anything he thinks will get him another hit of Kef.
Savardhan wasn't as strong as she had once been, or as clear mentally. Do you think he'll find that easy?
No, admitted Stregan. But he'll be very determined.
Yes. Stregan shook her head as though to clear it.
What am I doing? You won't listen to me.
I'm listening. But she clearly didn't believe me.
It's none of my concern, I know. Just...
She pointed to the black box.
Just kill as many of me and I as you can. And don't send him after me.
You're leaving? Of course she was. There was no need to answer such a foolish question, and she didn't bother. Instead, she went back into her room, saying nothing else, and closed the door. I opened my pack, took out the money and set it on the table, slid the black box into its place. Touched it in the pattern that would make it disappear. Nothing but folded shirts, a few packets of dried food. Then I went over to where Savardhan lay and prodded her with one booted foot. Wake up. She started, sitting suddenly, and flung her back against the nearby bench, breathing hard. Wake up, I said again. We're leaving.
Chapter 12. Except for those hours when communications had been cut off, I had never really lost the sense of being part of Justice of Torin. My kilometers of white-walled corridor, my captain, the decade commanders, each decade's lieutenants, each one's smallest gesture, each breath, was visible to me. I had never lost the knowledge of my ancillaries, 20-bodied, one Amat, one Torin, one Atrepa, one Bo, and two Esk. Hands and feet for serving those officers, voices to speak to them. My thousands of ancillaries in frozen suspension. Never lost the view of Shiserna itself, all blue and white, old boundaries and divisions erased by distance. From that perspective, events in Ors were nothing, invisible, completely insignificant. In the approaching shuttle, I felt the distance decrease, felt more forcefully the sensation of being the ship. One Esk became even more what it had always been, one small part of myself. My attention was no longer commanded by things apart from the rest of the ship. Two Esk had taken One Esk's place while One Esk was on the planet. Two Esk prepared tea in the Esk Decade Room for its lieutenants, my lieutenants. It scrubbed the white-walled corridor outside Esk's baths, mended uniforms torn on leave. Two of my lieutenants sat over a game board in the Decade Room, placing counters around, swift and quiet, three others watching. The lieutenants of the Amat, Torin, Atrepa, and Bo Decades, the Decade Commanders, Hundred Captain Rubrin, administrative officers and medics, talked, slept, bathed, according to their schedules and inclinations. Each decade held 20 lieutenants and its decade commander. But Esk was now my lowest occupied deck. Below Esk, from Var down, half of my decade decks was cold and empty, though the holds were still full. The emptiness and silence of those spaces where officers had once lived had disturbed me at first, but I was used to it by now. On the shuttle, in front of One Esk, Lieutenant On sat silent, jaw clenched. She was, in some respects, more physically comfortable than she had ever been in Ors. The temperature, 20 degrees C, was more suitable for her uniform, jacket, and trousers. And the stink of swamp water had been replaced by the more familiar and more easily tolerable smell of recycled air. But the tiny spaces, which when she had first come to Justice of Torin had excited pride in her assignment and anticipation of what the future might hold, now seemed to trap and confine her. She was tense and unhappy. Esk Decade Commander Tiond sat in her tiny office. It held only two chairs and a desk close against one wall, barely more than a shelf, and space for perhaps two more people to stand. Lieutenant On has returned, I said to her, and to Hundred Captain Rubrin on the command deck. The shuttle docked with a thunk. Captain Rubrin frowned. She had been surprised and dismayed at the news of Lieutenant On's sudden return. The order had come directly from Anander Mianai, who was not to be questioned. Along with it had come orders not to ask what had happened. In her office on the Esk deck, Commander Tiond sighed, closed her eyes and said, "Tea." She sat silent till Tuesk brought her a cup and a flask, poured, and set both at the commander's elbow. "She'll see me at her earliest convenience." One Esk's attention was mostly on Lieutenant On, threading her way through the lift and the narrow white corridors that would take her to the Esk decade, to her own quarters.